You're listening to Weird Medicine. Weird Medicine on 202. Is that his theme song?
I don't think it is, but I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo,
from the brand new Weird Medicine Studios in Upper East Tennessee, it's Weird Medicine. Or in Bengali, Ajab Chikitsa. I'm Dr. Steve with my little friend P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hello,
and we've got in the studio tonight Double Vasectomy Todd.
Hey, how's it going?
And we also have Jefferson the lawyer, who we're happy to say is back from sabbatical.
Hey, glad to be back.
Okay, good man.
He's always back from sabbatical.
Rob from Elizabethton is sick tonight, and I told him to keep his germy ass out of our studio, so he's not going to be with us tonight. Of course, normally he just sits there in front of the microphone with this expectant look on his face and never says a word. So. Welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical program in the history of radio. If you're new to this show, we try to deal with medical problems honestly, with plain language, and with no limitations regarding content. If you have a medical question and you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider, give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com or visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's 423.
Die Tootie.
We're also on Twitter at Weird Medicine, and you can also check out the Weird Medicine store, which is, there's a link to it on our website at drsteve.com.
Wow, we got a store?
Yeah, and it's, and thank you for asking, Todd. It's, the Weird Medicine store is one of those dumb Amazon stores, but I put a bunch of stuff on there that we talk about on the show. Like, probiotics, and it's got headings like your awful bowels, your flabby body, your disgusting mouth, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there's solutions for sweaty armpits to irritable bowel syndrome on there. And it's just something fun that we're doing. And every penny, if we ever made a cent off of it, which we probably won't, but if we did, every penny would go to doing live Weird Medicine shows or helping out Pat and Big A or somebody else if we find somebody that's worthy. So,
cool.
So there you go. So,
you mean I can't buy a new fishing pole with any money?
Yeah, we'll get you a fishing pole, John. That's fine.
Need a fishing pole.
We'll get you a fishing pole, my friend. There, we also have some Weird Medicine merchandise now. And the main reason that we did this was I ran into Fluffernutter, Matt Hoffman, on the internet. And he's the guy that did the cigar bands for the Ron and Fez 20th anniversary that turned out to be their 18th anniversary.
They were awesome.
Yep. And they're really cool. And he did some of the logos on ronfez.net, and he's done some stuff for Channel 202-type projects. And he does logos. And he's really talented. And so I just got him to do a logo for us. And he did three of them. One sort of dark and very weird. And then the other two are things that maybe we could use on a corporate letterhead. But the other thing we could use is T-shirts. So I went to Cafe Press and got us some T-shirts and some mugs and stuff with Weird Medicine logos on it. And they're really cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. I gotta get a T-shirt.
Yeah, the main thing is that, and look, I'm not trying to sell anybody who's listening out there anything. You hear enough commercials on 202, okay? Don't buy anything. You don't have to. I'm just saying it because it's cool. It's something that we did. I basically did it so I can have a place to buy Christmas presents for people that it'd be something that they otherwise couldn't have. So
Cool.
Anyway.
Right.
So, but that's cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. So that's where we are. Please remember, we are not your healthcare providers. Check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse practitioner, acupuncturist, yoga instructor, chiropractor, whatever. So I thought we would go over some old news. Number one, we are kind of, this show tonight is, and next week's show, we're practicing for our October 24th live show. So this is all voicemails. We have a few topics to do because we've got some old news to do. But for the most part, we're going to be just taking all these voicemails that came in, doing one after another, and sort of without doing a whole lot of prior preparation and simulating a live show because we haven't done one in a while. You know, when we did Tippy Tom's rectal exam, that was June of 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it was. So we're a little bit out of practice. We've gotten used to the fact that we can do some prep, or at least I can do some prep. So,
yeah.
So we'll...
I prep.
I know you do. You prep by emptying out your...
colon.
Prostate. And your seminal vesicles before you come over here. I know that.
Well, then I prep too.
Billy Mays. We did a show on July 4th, our Dead Celebrity special, and one of the things we talked about was Billy Mays and how not to ignore high blood pressure, and that if we were going to take something out of his meaningless or his demise wasn't meaningless, but it was, you know, unfortunate and untimely. Mm-hmm. And if we were going to make something out of that instead of just talking about his celebrity, we made it into a topic about how not to die like he did, which is not to avoid or not to ignore high blood pressure. Because the coroner's report said he had an enlarged heart probably caused by high blood pressure, and that's what caused the fatal electrical rhythm that killed him. Well, the other thing that you need to do is apparently is avoid cocaine as well, because his final toxicology report came through and it showed that there were metabolites of cocaine in his bloodstream. Now, to be fair, his family is disputing this and they're going for yet a third toxicology report from what I hear. So it may turn out that this one was a fluke. Who knows? But what it showed was he didn't have cocaine in his bloodstream. He had metabolites of cocaine in his bloodstream. And what that means is that when you take in certain drugs, it's broken down by the bloodstream, or I'm sorry, by the liver, and particularly the liver, and then excreted either in the stool or by further breaking it down, second pass through the liver, and then you piss out the rest. And this is one of the reasons that urine drug screens work, okay? But also, what it tells you is that if there is no cocaine in your bloodstream, but there's breakdown products of cocaine, then you probably are 2 or 3 days out from using the drug. Does that make sense? So the breakdown products are still circulating around. They're going out of your body every day through urine, but you can't get them out all at once.
Now, couldn't there be other products that would break down in similar breakdown properties?
Maybe. There may be. Now, it just depends on how specific the test is. You know, the test can be sensitive or specific, and the more specific a test is, the less likely it is that the positive test is false.
Right.
So, I would assume that this coroner's blood test was pretty specific.
Right.
So, we'll see.
I know they want to find the immediate cause, but why don't they just do a hair follicle test on him?
Well, it's a great question. And for those out there that don't know what Jefferson's talking about, when you take drugs or other medications, you're depositing that stuff in your skin cells and also in your hair cells, because the hair is living tissue at one point, and then it's laid down in layers in this substance called keratin, and it's a protein. And so you can determine if someone got arsenic a month ago by analyzing their hair, and you could do the same thing. So yeah, I don't know why. Maybe they are doing that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to this thing at all. I'm just reading what's in the news. But that would be a great way to confirm it. And then you can tell kind of how long ago it was that he was exposed to it.
Sure.
Now, the hair follicle, if you took coke last week and that was the only time you took it, I could detect metabolites in your body if I had a sensitive and specific enough test. But the hair follicles wouldn't show up anything.
Right.
You know, because you wouldn't have had time enough to grow hair. Todd, you're going to barber school. How long does, how fast does hair grow again?
Human hair grows about a quarter inch a month.
Quarter inch a month. So, see, if it was only a week, it would be 1/16 of an inch, just not enough to.
Yeah, but see, anything. What's confusing me is, years ago I worked as a probation officer.
Yeah.
You can take a hair test, a hair sample, and test for drugs for quite a few years back. So how is that?
Well, it depends on how some of the people you had, I'm assuming, were rednecks, and they had long, greasy hair.
You think?
So if they were long-haired rednecks, then they probably had a year or two's worth of hair there.
Hmm.
I mean...
Yeah, probably.
So you said a quarter inch a month,
yeah,
right?
It's a quarter inch a month, on average.
So that would be, what, 3 inches in a year?
Yep. About that.
Oh, yeah. Those guys have hair that's a foot long.
Yeah. So. I was going to say 18 inches.
Yeah. At least going down the back part.
Yeah. Maybe not so much.
Real short in the front.
Business in the front, party in the back.
Right on, baby.
But, the family members of Billy Mays believe the medical examiner's report and then the toxicology reports are conflicting. So, but if he was a habitual user of cocaine, which I'm not saying he was, you know, we don't know.
Right.
But if you are, then that can drive your blood pressure up, which could be increasing the problem with the left side of the heart growing large and the muscle getting large, so which would predispose you to sudden death, which is what happened to him. So it's just just another thing that we can watch out for. So just be careful, and if you're habitually abusing street drugs, stop, get help, because you know, this is the kind of thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we have somewhat of a new bit, and we've got some questions on this, but this is an audience participation bit, and the double vasectomy, Todd appropriately came up with this bit. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Well, yeah, sure.
I'm putting you on the spot just a little bit.
No, that's okay. I don't remember where the conversation came up, but everyone's had it. There's a myth, or it may not be a myth, that if a guy drinks a lot of pineapple juice, then that's more pleasant for his chick when she blows him because his jizz will taste better.
Okay.
And I thought, wouldn't it be a great idea to have a whole bunch of audience members test that for us and maybe even try some different juices and some different things and send us in some calls.
Yeah, and just let us know. Well,
or have your chick do it.
Yeah, there are people. I found an article on the internet, which of course that means it must be true.
Of course.
About sperm taste, and they claim that it's affected by what you eat, and state that because it's a secretion from the body, so is everything else. Well, we've talked about this before, that diabetes mellitus or mellitus is named that way because in the old days, doctors tasted urine to see if it tasted sweet. And diabetes mellitus means voluminous urine that tastes sweet.
Yeah.
And this was before the age of urine dipsticks.
Mm-hmm.
And
now it's just called diabetes.
That's right.
Sugar. I got the sugar.
Sugar diabetes. My diabetes supplies from that's Liberty Medical. But
thanks, Wilford.
So urine tastes sweet if you have diabetes, so why wouldn't sperm taste sweet? Well, the makeup of sperm, semen is 90% seminal fluids, and it includes fructose, which is a sugar. It also includes protein and some various trace minerals and nutrients. It's a neutral acidity, so the pH is right around 7. And it's only 1% sperm cells, though. 99% of it is stuff that carries sperm cells from one place to the other. And then the rest of it is a bunch of different proteins and sugars and salts and cholesterol and water. And these things protect and feed and fuel sperm, you know, on its journey into the nether regions. So, the theory is that what you eat will make semen change its taste.
Mm-hmm.
And what these guys said, that with sperm taste, the aim is to make it taste sweeter. I don't know about that. I mean, why not make it taste spicy?
It's all about what you
like.
I know,
that's right.
If it's spicy, then it may burn coming out.
Right, that's possible, because like other spicy foods, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, good job.
I don't know many people that can handle Mexican that many times in a week.
I know.
Or that many at that time.
Well, what it says here is to cut out alcohol, caffeine, recreational drugs, and nicotine. They're all pollutants. Well, whatever. How does that have to do with anything?
I don't know.
Those are good things to do. But I can't imagine that has anything to do with semen taste.
This third one on here, the way it's typed up, just looks funny if you read it.
Yeah, get plenty of fruit every day.
No, but it doesn't say get plenty of fruit, but it says fruit, get plenty each day and sweeten your sperm taste.
Yeah, that's right.
Fruit?
Right then.
And then it says eat plenty of vegetables, which are generally good for improving sperm taste, but then doesn't say which ones they are. So.
No, and wouldn't asparagus, you know, asparagus does to your
Can pee. You imagine asparagus sperm?
Oh, my God, because the piss is awful.
I know. And then they have this big, long article in here, and that says, do not buy products that claim to make your own semen taste better. There's no evidence that they work. You know what? No evidence on any of this. I actually went and did a search, which I'm sure I got flagged for, I just went to PubMed.org. And by the way, if you want to do your own literature searches, it's totally free, open to the public. And if you see an outrageous claim on television for some supplement, go to PubMed.org and search for it and see if there's any validity to it, because it has every article from the medical literature in the last 10 years on there. Well, anyway, I looked for semen and taste, and I searched for it a bunch of different ways, and there's not a single study in the medical literature that has anything to do with any of this. Because why would there be?
No.
Why? I mean, really, I'm not to say that doctors aren't without a sense of humor, but people who are funding studies generally don't have a sense of humor when it comes to what they're putting their money toward. So there's just no money in this kind of research.
Well, my question is, are there actually products specifically targeted for that?
I mean,
they advertise, yes. Make yourself taste better to your girl.
Yes.
And, wow.
Yes.
Hmm.
And I don't know what's in them. And most of these things that you see on the internet, these kind of supplements that make these kinds of claims are usually collections of amino acids and herbal supplements and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, if somebody has had success with one of these, let us know.
Yeah, great thing.
And we'll look into it. And then, so if you want to do this audience participation thing, what you want to do is get some pineapple juice. And you can try some other juices and do a blinded study. So you drink it for every day for a week, and then, but don't tell your spouse. And then let her see if she can guess, him or her, guess when when you've been, you know, modifying your diet.
Don't you have to do a baseline?
Well, you can do a baseline, or you can do a crossover. In other words, you can do it 1 week and then the next week not, and see if they can tell which week you did it in.
Okay, which one gets you the most BJ's?
Right, or just, you know, the better report.
Best flavor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. We'd try it. You know, work out your own study out there. I mean, you guys are smart. You can figure it out. And come up with a study of your own at home, have fun with it, and let us know if it works. I will not be participating because, we just don't do that kind of thing, so...
Poor fella.
It's okay. It's okay. No. Anyway, I'll get myself in even more trouble.
Yes, you will.
Else,
yeah. I'm sitting here thinking, shut up.
One thing I wanted to tell you about that was a corollary while I was researching this on PubMed was I found a study called A Matter of Taste. This was the one study I could find that had anything to do with taste and semen. It says direct detection of female mating status in the bed bug. And I just wanted to read this to you guys. This is a study that was in, Procedures of Biologic Science in 2003. And it says, males of the bedbug traumatically inseminate females by inserting a needle-like penis through the female's abdominal wall after she is fed. And then they demonstrate that mating duration determines ejaculate size, so the longer that he keeps his penis penetrating into her abdomen, makes him ejaculate longer, and that the penis bears sensillae, which means that it is a sensory organ, and males use their penis to taste whether their current mate has recently copulated. So they have a sensory organ in their penis that can taste other bedbug jizz. Now, can you imagine being a damn bedbug?
Yeah. Oh, God.
They're just cursed.
I just wouldn't even chance it.
I know.
Never mind.
I would be an absolutely celibate bedbug.
Well, that's a bad moment times two. And what mate's been cheating on you.
Yeah.
And you just tasted somebody else's jizz.
With your penis.
Yeah.
Although, wouldn't you love to get somebody on the stand with that one? Wouldn't you love to get to cross-examine somebody that had tasted somebody else?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In bedbug court. All right, let's get to some questions. Oh, by the way, if you want to...
Hi, Dr. Steve.
Wait a second. If you want to send us a voicemail... 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TOOTIE. Or you can email us at drsteve202@gmail.com. You could try Twitter, which is Twitter/weirdmedicine. Or just go to drsteve.com and you can leave a message there. Okay. All right.
If I wonder about HPV, that's human papillomavirus. My ex-wife had it. My new wife has it. Did I give it to my new wife? I hear it's common. Is there something that's on my penis that I need to treat to, although I'm monogamous now, like how do I stop spreading it if my new wife is, actually, I would like some information on that HPV if you could talk about that, Dr. Steve. Thank you. I love the show. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. Human papillomavirus, it's a good thing to talk about. The prevalence, in other words, the number of people, the percentage of people in the country that have human papillomavirus overall is like 26%. And in females, I can't remember, 18 to 49, well, that's a demographic, but it's somewhere, young women, it approaches almost 50%. So if you could flip a coin twice easy and get heads both times, if mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's 50-50. So it's just as likely that both of his wives had it already.
And not necessarily that he
gave that he gave it to him. Now, it is also certain, though, it's 100% certain that he's been exposed to it, you know, because he's
right.
been with it. Now, it doesn't mean that he's carrying the virus, but it's very possible. So what this bears is going to your... local primary care person, if you're comfortable with them, or a urologist, or even a dermatologist, and get them to do an examination under a magnifying glass and see if there are any small warts there, genital warts. Now, go ahead.
Real quick, back to the population that has it, 26% yep. of just the general population, so of the
right.
people out there.
Right.
And 50% of the females...
Well, 50%, well, what it is...
Or is it 50% of that 26%?
Yeah, what it is when you get to a certain population group, the incidence peaks, and it may be because more people are being more sexually active, so we're seeing more now and then less in people who are older, but we're also not testing the older folks for HPV as much either.
And there's more women that go to the doctor for GYN exams more so than men
yeah.
going
well,
for
Yeah,
just
maybe 50%
exam.
Of men too, but what we know is that we test women for HPV when we do a pap smear.
Right.
So, or, you know, if there's an abnormality in their pap smear, even the slightest abnormality, they'll test it for HPV.
But you usually don't test a guy unless he calls a radio show about medicine and says, hey, I've got this thing on my pecker.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And he says, yeah, somebody or, tells him to go get it looked at.
Right, or he's got cauliflower growing on his, ugh. You know. And that's kind of what it, and it's worst, it can look like chunks of cauliflower
yeah.
growing out of your skin. But often it's just real small little skin tag looking things, and you might mm-hmm. even miss them. So they're little fleshy skin tags, and they've got virus in them, and you can transmit it from one person to another. So it's really common, and it's important for women to
get it checked and get it treated because it's a precursor to cervical cancer.
That's exactly right. And it's very treatable and curable when found early.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's one of those things, if we talked about, I think it was the first Weird Medicine somebody called in and we gave this technique out. One thing that you can do is do an aceto white test. And what that is you take a roll of gauze and you soak it in half white vinegar and half water and wring it out and then wrap it around your junk. Penis, basically, and more than testicles. I mean, it's just hard to...
If you want to get all of it in there, wrap it up.
Yeah, go ahead and wrap it up if you want. I mean, it won't hurt anything. Not tight.
Sausage and eggs. Sausage and eggs.
not so tight that it would cut off the circulation to anything, but right. Just nice and, you know, slightly snug, and leave it there for 5 minutes. If it starts to burn, take it off. I mean, don't be stupid. And but when you take it off, if there are abnormal tissues there, especially warts, they'll turn bright white.
Oh.
And you can see them. So that's a trick that people will do if they get diagnosed with warts and then they're treating them at home with one of those kits. You know, they can they just take a little bit of the medicine, put it on there on a certain schedule. It's different with every kit. But the trick is to catch them when they're small so that you can eradicate them. Eventually, you can eradicate all of it. Mm. So...
Honey, your sperm didn't taste like pineapple juice, but your penis tasted like vinegar. What's up with that? Oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
I thought you were going to say it tasted like cauliflower.
No.
All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Paul from Wisconsin, and my sister-in-law had some problems with her family anyway. I have got to go out west to California, and I'm absolutely afraid to death of flying, but it's going to take me too long to drive. But anyway, if you could just give me some help on what I could do to fly, that would be great. Thanks.
All right. You know, the interesting thing is we got two questions on that this time.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Oh,
Shannon
God.
From South Florida.
Of course it is.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I have a question for you. A friend of mine, Robin, and her mother are both afraid of flying, which got me thinking, is the fear of flying more of a, like, a genetic thing, or is it like a learned response? Okay.
Or learned.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. Love those pregnant pauses. Okay. I don't think it's genetic. It's obviously something that's passed down emotionally from one family member to the other. And you can infect your kids with your own dumb fears.
Oh, yeah.
Now, flying is really one of those things that people have a significant fear of. And the reason is that even though driving is more dangerous per capita, when you have a flying accident, it is catastrophic for the most part. Like this thing over the Hudson River. I mean, it's tragic. Everybody's dead, mm-hmm. and it's just catastrophic. You know, you're just out to do something fun. You're going.
Didn't that one plane land in the Hudson that everybody?
No, we're talking about the helicopter.
Lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. So
we remember.
So
that.
In the last little bit, two planes that landed in the Hudson. One didn't make it, the other one did, so your chances are 50-50.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great skewing of statistics.
What's your margin for error on that?
Yeah, beautiful way to, yeah, just take two incidences that you want to use and ignore all the rest, and then, yeah, people do that all the time.
Hey.
I mean, that's just the judicious use of statistics. That you do it in politics all the time. Mm-hmm. So, it's just catastrophic. When there's a plane crash, it's a mess.
Right.
And, you know, it's just nothing. And everybody would love to avoid that. But you have no control over it for the most part
right.
once you're up there.
And they're all on the news graphically and dramatically.
Yep. Now, the news media love to report on airplane crashes. I mean, the statistics for news stories are pretty revealing. Of the New York Times front page stories, there were 1.7 murder stories for every 1,000 homicides, and 2.3 AIDS stories for every 1,000 AIDS deaths, and 0.02 cancer stories for every 1,000 cancer deaths, but 138 plane crash stories for every 1,000 airplane deaths.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I mean, it's no wonder people are terrified. Now, after 9/11, there were a lot of people that chose to drive instead of flying, and they estimated there were at least 1,600 extra deaths that year because driving is more dangerous than flying.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual risk of a person being involved in a fatal airline accident is once in every 19,000 years. So your odds are really good. So knowing that may help to alleviate your fears. Now, fears are irrational. I'm speaking rationally, so not always. But for some people, that'll do it. I mean, the specific fears are things like plane crashes, claustrophobia, the plane disintegrating. I used to have that one, where I would just think that the plane was going to disintegrate out from under me.
Really?
Yeah, because you're up in the air and you realize if you start picturing yourself sitting in this plane way up, you know, if you're outside the plane picturing yourself in there, there's nothing holding you up.
Right, so don't picture that.
Right. Doc, it hurts when I do this. People have generalized panic attacks. There's loss of control. I know I would feel better if there was some mechanism for jettisoning the fuselage with the people in it if there was a problem.
It is, but you die.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's called a door.
Yeah. But there was I saw it was in Popular Science or something where proposed that you would have these explosive bolts that would shoot, you know, if the plane was going down, they would jettison the fuselage and the passenger compartment would come down on a parachute, which would be cool. Why don't they do that? Well, it turns out that's a lot more dangerous than not doing it, because a failure of that system, everybody dies, and it's going to happen a lot more frequently than the plane actually crashed.
Especially if you're upside down.
Yeah. 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 And you just fall out. Exactly. So anyway, so what can you do about it? Number one, know the facts about airline safety. Practice square breathing, which is good for all kinds of anxiety. We should probably go through that again. I tried to teach Earl Douglas this and failed miserably, so I'll try to do better with you guys. One of the problems when you have anxiety is you're hyperventilating. So you're blowing out carbon dioxide that's supposed to be in your bloodstream, and you're decreasing your carbon dioxide level. Well, that causes a bunch of different symptoms. It causes tingling around the mouth and the fingers. It causes lightheadedness, feeling of faintness, heart starts beating fast, all the things that are physical manifestations of anxiety. Well, then that makes you more anxious, which makes you hyperventilate even more, and so you get on this sort of vicious cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to stop that, you got to stop hyperventilating. Well, one thing you can do is to breathe into a brown paper bag, so you're rebreathing your own breath, and it has carbon dioxide in it, so it increases your carbon dioxide level. But you just look like an idiot if you're on an airplane breathing into this, you know, you look like a fool. So one way that you can do it without anybody knowing what you're doing is square breathing. So this is how you do it. Number one, you inhale for 4 seconds. Okay? So inhale for 4 seconds. Now hold it for 4 seconds. Exhale for 4 seconds. Hold it for 4 seconds. And that's it. That's square breathing.
That gave me a headache.
Well, you can do it without the sound effects, but, otherwise we're just sitting here with dead air. So inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. Exhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. Now, if you'd rather do it longer, you could do 6, 6, 6, and 6, or 3, 3, 3, and 3. It doesn't matter, as long as each side of the square is the same. That's what makes it a square.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that, you can only be exhaling or inhaling 1/4 of the time, which means that you cannot hyperventilate. It's impossible.
Oh, I see.
Because when you're hyperventilating, you're doing 50-50. You're doing linear breathing, I guess. So you're breathing in and breathing out, breathing in and breathing out.
Gotcha. You know what works well on a plane doing that? Rather than doing 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi,
yeah,
do 1 jihad. 2 jihad.
Okay.
Out loud. Make sure you do it out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
See how that works.
You don't have to worry about flying.
Exactly.
Don't be afraid of flying.
It cures the problem.
Sir, can you come with me? All right. So square breathing is good for all kinds of anxiety. There is a CD that you can get that's got sort of some self-hypnosis stuff on it called Fly Without Fear, which you can get at Amazon.com. There is a type of therapy called cognitive therapy, which is usually a PhD psychologist will put out a shingle that says, I am a cognitive therapist, and they deal with behaviors. They don't have you go back and say and talk, lay down with your eyes closed and talk about your mother. They talk about concrete behaviors and ways that you react to things. And within 6 weeks, they can usually have this kind of anxiety syndrome under control. The other thing is there are virtual reality exposures. I think we've talked about this before. I used to have panic syndrome, and I had a real problem being in crowds because it stemmed from somebody breaking into my house, and I caught them, and it just freaked me out. And I started realizing that the world was a little more dangerous than I had led myself to believe or allowed myself to believe. So everywhere when I was in a large crowd, I just knew there were murderers and thieves around me. And, you know, just by statistics, it had to be true. So I started getting freaked out. Well, I finally beat that by getting caught in a crowd that was so big and so oppressive, trying to get out of a sporting event, that I could get better right then or die. And so it was a confrontational type of therapy, you know, where I was just right in the middle of what was scared me the most. And you can do that with flying too. They have virtual reality devices where you get in and it simulates flying, and you just do it and do it and do it. You pay for the privilege of scaring the crap out of yourself until the fear goes away. And once you realize, what's the worst thing that can happen to me? Well, in an airplane, it's pretty bad. That's why that therapy doesn't work as well. But for the most part, when you've done it a few times, you realize, hey, this isn't going to kill me.
Or you could always call into the Maury Povich show.
Yes.
He could bring you on.
Yeah. And he'd
do the same thing.
Scare the crap out of you just for fun. Without and laugh. And laugh. there are medications there. I know people that take Ativan or Xanax before they get on a plane.
Have a cocktail.
Yeah, or tequila.
That works.
Yeah. You think that works? Drinking alcohol?
Yeah. Makes it much better.
Really?
Always.
For you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I hate to prescribe alcohol.
It works good for me.
But, yeah, if it works for you, what the hell?
Well, I mean, I think alcohol's really is a liquid courage. And if you don't really like the way things are going.
Drink. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here, y'all, from P.A. John. If you don't like how things are going, drink.
Well, I usually have a drink on the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never do that.
Settles me down a little bit.
Yeah. Especially since they started charging for it.
Yeah. Bloody Mary.
Good Sounds to go. Good to me.
$12 for a Bloody Mary.
Is it?
It's only like $5.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and it's not really a Bloody Mary. It's a can of Heinz tomato juice. And
Tots or Mott's or whatever.
Yeah, Mott's. and one of those little mini bottles of vodka, and that's a Bloody Mary.
Yep. You don't want to ruin your taste buds for that meal either.
Yeah.
That's probably the most dangerous part of flying.
You haven't flown in a long time.
No.
You don't get meals anymore.
Really?
Yeah. No. I can't remember the last time I got a meal on a plane.
That's a blessing in disguise.
When we went to, I think the last time I got a meal on a plane was going to Australia, because they have to.
Yeah, that's like 23 hours.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Took us... this is completely off the topic. It took us 36 hours to get from the hotel room to back home. Total time. From the time we left the hotel room till we got home, 36 hours. It was insane. And you don't know what day it is. You don't know where you're supposed to be, what time it is. It's awful. It's a really cool place. It's just too damn far away. Hmm. Anyway, so the most dangerous part of the airplane trip, the car ride to the airport. So there you go.
Hey, Dr. Steve, this is Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
I'm having a hard time quitting smoking, and I think it's due to an issue of, you know, kind of like a
He bailed on that one.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Oh, there you
Andy.
Go.
I'm having a hard time quitting smoking. The biggest problem I'm having is not that I don't want to. It's just I keep tricking myself into thinking about all of the times that I, you know, like all the stuff I've done, you know, smoking while like waiting for stuff or you know, just sitting around in general.
I do
not. That's the big issue. It's not that I don't want to. It's just that
I know exactly
there's a lot
about.
Of sitting around time, and that's when I smoke the most. Just curious if there's anything I can do about that. Thank you.
What he's asking is, what the hell do you do with yourself when you've got free time and you don't smoke anymore? Because for smokers, did you used to smoke?
Nope.
You never did. Jefferson?
No.
Never did? You dipped.
Well, cigars,
right?
And...
Yeah.
I used to dip.
Not cigarettes.
I actually thought about picking that back up today.
What, dipping?
Yeah.
Why?
You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
Well, that's a given. We already knew that.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll probably die of a heart attack diabetes. So
you
thought,
have diabetes.
Hey,
you just had a
go ahead and
you just had
start
a baby,
again.
And you're so you're going to dip. Yeah. That's genius.
Oral cancers are attractive.
Yeah.
I think you should do it.
I think so too.
I support you.
All right.
Yeah, I need a new partner anyway. The God, where were we?
What do you do with your downtime when you're a smoker or
see,
you're a post-smoker?
I smoked
three
packs of cigarettes a day at one point in my life, and any time I had a free moment, I was smoking. And that's one of the things that I would avoid quitting because it was for this exact reason. What Andrew was saying is, what the hell am I going to do with myself during that time? Because you can't imagine doing nothing and not smoking. If I was in the car driving, and this was before XM, but even if I'd had XM, I'd still be smoking. I would chain smoke, just one after another. And if I was sitting on the pot, I had a cigarette in my mouth. And I had more than one.
Burns to your penis.
Burn, right at that part of the Roman war helmet, you know, right where it meets the John between your legs where the cigarette ash would go.
He really did. I was just joking.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, God.
One, and I would have quit.
Yeah,
one.
That's it. No more crap. No more smoking. Ooh, on the crapper.
It stings.
No.
So.
Yeah. You think?
That's awful.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, and even that didn't stop me. I mean, I know I've got I've known lots of people who had cancer that didn't stop smoking. So
sure.
A little burn on the dick wasn't going to make me quit.
Oh, no. I've known lots of old people on oxygen who would beg you to wheel them outside so they could smoke.
The thing that made me quit eventually was the fact that it wasn't cancer, it wasn't heart disease. I tried imagining my aorta being caked with plaque and stuff, and that didn't do it. It was the fact that for men over 40, the number one cause of impotence is of tobacco abuse. So that's what finally scared me into it, because I was getting a little older and I finally quit. So, yeah, I guess I was right at 40 when I quit, and I'm 53 now. So so that answers one of your questions, what do you do with your hands when you're not smoking? But other than that, you've just got to find – you have to understand, and your brain finally has to realize that you don't have to be doing something with your hands all the time. And you don't have to have that cigarette in your hands. But if you want to cut up a straw and put it between your fingers and you can kind of noodle around with it, or a pen is a lot less conspicuous, and you can do the Bob Dole with the pen, you know, and have it between your fingers and noodle around with it. You know, that's there. Other than that, it's just a psychological thing. You have to get out of the habit of thinking that you have to have that.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about it before. It's typically when somebody smokes, it's not when you're sitting in a business meeting, because most businesses and places where you're going to be around other people these days are no smoking facilities. So it's going to be driving in the car or sitting at the house after a meal. You're going to go outside and smoke or do something. So you just have to find out when you are doing it. And that's the number one thing for me, I think. Find out when you are doing it, and then just start eliminating the number of times you do at that time.
Yeah.
Such as the drive to work. If you smoke three cigarettes, eliminate one a day for a few weeks, and then you should be done with it.
Yeah, I did that finally with – I used the Zyban to get off Now, people are using Chantix now, and it's got a lot of side effects, but it has a really good success rate, too. But if you can do it on your own, it's obviously better. I mean, the less medication, the better. But, yeah, I would smoke two before I hit the showers every day. And, I mean, for me, if a big part of my smoking was sitting on the John, it was hard for me not to do that. You know, you got to...
But then the other thing is, I think part of his question was, what else could he do besides the smoking for that downtime? Pick up another habit, such as drinking coffee or tea.
Oh, God.
Wait, wait, wait.
No, no, because they're saying now that a pot of coffee a day can be healthy for the kidneys.
Really?
I'm going to have to find that for you,
please.
Obviously. But
I was going to say, take
reading.
Up Sudoku.
Yeah, Sudoku, or
just
buy a Game
brain,
Boy,
brain waste,
or play the play piano, or PSP or something. That would be a good thing.
Then you'll end up.
I almost have a theory on you now.
Then you'll end up
because
with,
if you had to fill all that time, that's why you have every hobby known to man.
Oh, that's true.
That's why you're such a Renaissance man. You just do everything.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. But enough about me. No,
you'll end up with. Arthritis
thumb.
Of the thumb with the PSP.
Yeah, better to have arthritis of the thumb, though. That
not after you've seen the replacement surgery for the...
For the thumb?
Yeah.
You guys do that?
Carpal, metacarpal.
Okay.
Yeah, you go in and you crunch out one of the bones, then you take a tendon from up in the arm and pull it back through the bone.
Shut the F up.
No, I'm not shutting it up. And then you tie it back down and...
He will not shut it up.
There it goes.
Now, what the hell are you talking about? You're talking about, like, for someone that's got arthritis of the thumb, you do
arthritis
all this?
In the thumb. If you have bad arthritis in the thumb,
just fuse it.
Well, that's it. You go in and remove the bone. That
can they use it after that?
Yeah, you have movement. You have decreased range of motion, but you still have the thing. The biggest reason why you would do that is pain in the thumb.
Yeah. God, that's got to be a badass.
It's amazing to watch the bone being taken out. Sometimes you can get it in a big chunk, but otherwise it's...
Really?
Yeah, you break it out into little pieces, and because it's so arthritic, it's just it crumples.
Is that right? Hmm. Yeah. That's definitely... I haven't seen enough orthopedic surgeries, but that sounds pretty interesting.
It's a cool surgery.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know how we got there from where we started, but anyway, Andrew... definitely quit smoking. We'll help you anyway. You can always email me, drsteve202@gmail.com. If you just need somebody to talk to about quitting smoking, feel free. I'm, as an ex-smoker, look, if nobody smoked more than me, except maybe Mary Tyler Moore. I read once that she smoked 5 packs of smokes a day back in the day.
No.
Yeah,
kidding.
So she, and you would never expect Mare to be smoking that much, but apparently that's the case. But hardly anyone has smoked more than I have. And so if I can quit, anybody can quit. And I was the most addicted to cigarettes person you ever met in your life. And I was always sure I knew exactly how many I had and where they were and where I could get more if I needed them and had plenty of extra lighters and places to smoke, all that stuff. So if I can do it, you can. So, Andrew, if you got a problem quitting, feel free to email me. But talk to your regular medical provider. They may have some help for you. So good luck with that. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's see. Let's go to Ben. Ben.
Dr. Steve, this is Ben from Rochester.
Hello, Ben. You're on Weird Medicine.
Whenever I wear a condom, no matter if it's a Magnum or any other size, ultra thin, whatever it be, I cannot keep an erection. What is my problem, and what should I do?
Boy, that's a, you know, condoms, that's the main complaint about condoms, I think, is that they wreck the sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you've got one of those high sensitivity condoms on, if you then take it off, you can really tell the difference. Or if it breaks, you can really tell the difference. And so, by the way, guys, don't lie about it. Oh, I didn't know it broke. Bullshit. You knew it broke. So anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But so yeah, I'm not. You guys got any advice on this? As far as
the only thing I would say is maybe start jacking with one. And try and get used to the feel.
That's interesting.
That's not a bad idea, actually, John. Well, very good, John.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good idea. So going, instead of trying to get more sensitivity with the condom, is try to masturbate with one so that you can get used to it. And
what I would recommend is laying your partner down. If he or she is into it, put the condom on over top of them and jack with the condom on so that they're still involved, but you're getting used to the feeling with them. Okay. Now you can do it on your own, but it's just kind of weird to sit around and jack with a condom on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's safe masturbation, but yeah. I don't think your hand's going to care.
Well, we'll think more about that. If we come up with any answers to that, we'll talk about it next show, which will be very soon on XM 202. And thanks to Special Delivery for giving us this time slot tonight. And thanks to John Jefferson and Double Vasectomy Todd and everyone who listens to the show. Don't forget to visit drsteve.com or check out Twitter at Weird Medicine or leave us your medical questions at 423-343-8884. For PA John and me, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, and get off your asses and get some exercise. We'll see you soon for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
Comfortably numb.